The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Whether you love the action in sports from college football, college basketball, the NBA, or hockey, or if you're really into movies and television with the Oscars and Golden Globes, BetOnline.ag has something for all types of interest. Create a free account on BetOnline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and the exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday. And thank you for joining another special episode of You're Welcome. I'll tell you, we had Wednesday show. I read your guys' feedback on social media, and many of you asked why I had not responded to John Jones' snub of me. And I suppose I'll do it now, but to answer the question why I didn't respond, I don't really have a response. So here, let's back up a little bit. Here's what had happened. John had his fight. He won. As soon as he gets done with his fight, he goes out of the arena behind the curtain, and there's a kind of like a media row set up. Now, Ariel and I were hosting the show for ESPN, so John would go into the ESPN space, to let you guys know how this works, behind the camera, or rather behind the curtain at the arena. That, all he's looking at, though, is a camera. He's got a microphone. He's looking at a camera. He gets tossed to us. So we're not face-to-face, which we see him pop up on a screen. So he's at the arena. We're in the studio. Just to let you know how it works in case you didn't see this. And when John comes on, Ariel introduces us. Hey, it's Chael and Ariel over here. And, you know, hello, John type thing. And John says, hello, Ariel. He doesn't say, hey, guys, or hello, Ariel, hello, Chael. He says, hello, Ariel. Kind of goes out of his way to make sure that he's just saying hi to Ariel, which was a big clue, right? Because John has treated media this way before, as recently as the day before the press conference when he scolded a young lady in the that was asking him questions. So I kind of had the alert. And then when Ariel started to continue this and get to the first question, John responded by saying, hey, Ariel, I want to just make this clear. I only want to talk to you. And we went from there. So Ariel kind of looked at me and said, hey, are you okay with that? Yeah, I'm okay with that. Boom. And the interview concludes. I didn't think there was a whole lot to make there. I think that when you're in the role of the media, see, what John is used to is getting into a battle of wits with me, and then I make him look like a horse's ass. So I could see where he would not want to do that. Plus, he was getting asked very tough questions, and I understood the language. The media that was asking him questions didn't even know what a picogram was. They didn't know what turnable was. They didn't understand half-lives. They didn't understand the testing process. So I think that he might have had a fear that I was going to do that to him. Now, he would have been wrong. I would not have done that to him. Not in that role. I am there for ESPN. I'm on the clock, if you will, and this is his moment. But he doesn't know that. I couldn't fault him for that, and I don't. I don't hold a grudge that he did. I thought it was very rude. I thought that it was rude to come onto a show and then not take questions from the hosts of the show. That's just the deal that you make going in. But to give a member of the media a bump here or there, to have a back and forth, I've had wonderful back and forth moments myself. Formed a great relationship with Jim Rome, but it started from me putting him on blast. Formed a great relationship with Dan Le Batard. By great, I mean I continue to enjoy making him look a fool. But it all started by me coming on his show and making him look a fool. So if I got to look the fool, I mean, what goes around comes around. I didn't think I had the right to cry in spilled milk when I'm the one that wrote the blueprint for the sport and how you conduct media. And John took a chapter from the book. I didn't think that was fair. I will tell you, he did catch me off guard in this regard. One of the things that he had said to Ariel, which I took as a message to me, I should also admit to you, I could be taking it wrong, but the way I took it at the end of the show when he signed off to Ariel, and he continued to say Ariel's name over and over again to exclude me. But one of the things he said to Ariel is, hey, Ariel, I really appreciate you. You're a host that checks the facts and knows what he's talking about before you go out and start reporting things. I didn't take that as a compliment to Ariel, which perhaps it was. I took that as a slide to me. If I'm correct, and I have to say the word if, But if I'm correct, that was a little bit alarming as well, because the only time I had ever weighed in that entire week on John Jones and his licensing and the move to California and the decision of USADA, I took John's side. No, I didn't take his side out of our past relationship or as some way of saying I favor John Jones. I just looked at the evidence. I thought USADA got it right. They don't usually use logic over the science of the test. They usually will always default to the test. In this case, they used logic while looking at the results of the test and said, hey, we don't think there's a violation here. I agree with that. I agreed with the decision made. I agreed with the intimacy that the state of California had as it pertained to John Jones and the testing procedure, and they wanted to go ahead and move along with it. So he actually had that wrong. On this week, he was dealing with an ally of sorts. I was an ally. I was a supporter of the decision made. So I guess that's my response, and I know I kind of went in circles there, but ultimately, I don't really have one. John kind of went on a little hateful media tour. He does that anytime he's on top. It's very common. He will act as though he is holding something that you need. He forgets what side of the bread is buttered. He will think that his presence, the one time that he's fought in the last year, the three times collectively he's fought in the last 3 years, somehow moves the needle. When he skins his knee and stubs his toe, he then can't figure out why he doesn't have any allies on the other side, meaning the media. This is just a circle that he goes through, and this is the game that he plays. He can continue to do that. I won't pass judgment on that. But for him to give me a bit of a bump there, he then did the same thing to Anthony Smith. He did the same thing to Michael Bisping, and 2 days before, he did the same thing to a young lady at the press conference. So I don't know that it was totally out of ordinary. He's got the right to go do his media the way he wants to do the media. I suppose if you wanted to dissect the whole thing, when you agree to go on a show, you agree by the rules of the show. The show has the power. If you want to get your message out there, you must first get on the show, not try to act as though you're holding the card. So I didn't think it was all that big of a deal. That would be my response. It's a limited response. And there you go. So you like saving cash, right? You know what's even better? Saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. Well, if that revs your engine, then get ready for this. You can do it right from your living room. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It just might be the most rewarding thing you do today. Moving on, a little bit of bad news. Did you guys read? But Dana White has come out and said that, it appears to be quite obvious that Nick Diaz versus George Masvidal isn't going to happen. Well, that was a blow for me. I liked that fight. I liked that fight. I liked that matchup. I liked the return of Nick Diaz. I liked the whole thing. And Dana actually said, look, I don't think you have to do any further investigation than just going to Nick Diaz's Instagram account. It's very clear that he's not training for a fight. I haven't done that level of research. I have not gone to Nick's Instagram account. I don't know what's on there. But I'm going to expect that what's not on there is Nick in a gym with a mouthpiece and gloves on his hand. So apparently we're not going to get that contest, but we are able to look ahead in the very immediate future to Fedor versus Ryan Bader and the crowning of a heavyweight champion. And also Cejudo versus Dillashaw, which I happen to personally like, and I also like the direction that that is going in, which is straight venom by both guys. That fight is compelling to me for many reasons, and I haven't had a fight in the 125-pound division that I was compelled to in a while. In hindsight, Henry Cejudo versus Mighty Mouse was incredible, but that was in hindsight. I didn't get the anticipation going in. I'm more of an anticipation guy. I've seen enough cage fights in my day. There used to be an allure to that. Two guys going in there into a cage, there was a major allure to that. To the point that if I would go and watch a mixed martial arts event that was not in a cage, if it was in a ring, it lessened the visual appeal for me. But over time, and with as inundated, or as I hear some people call it saturated, I disagree with that word, but with as much as we are treated to MMA as fans here today in 2019, I need a storyline. I need to know why I'm watching. So I love the Cejudo-Demetrius fight, but I didn't know going into that fight that I was going to love it. I'd already seen it, and it wasn't all that competitive. I didn't think Henry had a chance. Had I known he had a chance, I would have liked the story more. But where I'm going with this as it goes to this fight, these guys are doing everything right, and this is very real. And I could just tell you, I was privileged to see this fight start to form. And Errol and I were doing a same exact circumstance as what we just dealt with in the John Jones situation, except instead of them being at the Forum and Errol and I being in the L.A. studio of ESPN, we were in the studio, but they were at the Staples Center. To put that into geographical terms for you, they're side by side. So these guys fought. They walked over to the studio. We had them in person. And we started with Henry. So when Henry gets done with his interview and he gets up to leave, Dillashaw's coming through the door. Well, the ESPN studio is not designed to have two trained killers engage one another organically. There's not security set up over there. The UFC doesn't have security. This isn't supposed to happen. Quite literally, as Henry is leaving, the door opens for him to exit. Cejudo comes walking in. They're face to face. They're both bloody and bruised, but they also both have 12-pound gold belts. There's no cameras rolling. We were not prepared for this. And all hell broke loose. All hell broke loose purely verbally, but the fight was made right there. And I'm only telling you guys this story because we didn't have the cameras on. And had we turned the cameras on, we wouldn't have even had it facing in this direction. This was not supposed to happen. This was as organic as it gets. And there's Errol and I trying to, one, enjoy the drama that's unfolding before us, but also play the buffer of, hey, guy, not here. Henry, go by. TJ, come this way. Shut the door behind you. This is not happening right here. This is not what we do. This is absolutely not what we do in the studio at ESPN. So that was just a great moment, though. It was a great moment, but it wasn't captured. You guys will never get to see it. That's why I tell you about it, because now some things are starting to get captured. And they're starting to be very fun. So Hudo's coming at Henry hard. Henry's coming back. Now, here's what I like. Okay, the storyline, great. Love that. But from a physical standpoint, Henry Cejudo is the best wrestler. He is the best amateur wrestler in mixed martial arts. TJ Dillashaw, in my opinion, is the best mixed martial arts wrestler in the sport today. Something has to give. Yoel Romero will tell you that Henry Cejudo is the best wrestler in MMA. Daniel Cormier will tell you that Henry Cejudo is the best, most decorated wrestler in MMA. I will tell you Henry Cejudo is the most decorated wrestler in MMA. But I will also tell you I believe TJ Dillashaw to be the best MMA wrestler in the sport. I don't know if I'm right. That's just my opinion. I don't know if I'm right. TJ comes in at different angles. He has different setups. He is doing techniques that you would never see in an amateur wrestling match. But you can see them because of the posture in MMA. And what I'm talking about that is they're both standing up and down. Very first thing two wrestlers do before the match even starts, before the referee even blows the whistle, is they bend their knees. The posture in amateur wrestling is so much different. So the techniques that you can do are more limited. TJ Dillashaw has found a way to double-cross a system. He's bringing his own techniques in. People have never seen before. The innovative ones, the great ones in the sport. John Jones would fall into that category. He is so innovative, so dynamic, so unpredictable because he's making up moves. When you make up your own skills that aren't out of the box, that no one's ever done before, that means no one's ever seen it before. As no one's ever seen it before, they don't have a defense to it. The defense isn't created. Which is what makes it innovative and what makes it effective. I offer to you, and I don't know if you guys are able to see this, TJ Dillashaw has found a way to do that with wrestling. The same way as George St. Pierre could come out and out-wrestle everybody in the sport because of George's setups. George was a setup guy. George's technique had been done a million times. His setups is what got him over the hump. TJ Dillashaw is doing attacks that have never been done before. I'm just interested to see, am I right? Am I right about that? Henry Cejudo laughs when I say that. He thinks I'm out of my mind. I might be. But this is what I'm seeing from my living room watching them fight. Henry Cejudo has the accomplishments in amateur wrestling and is the best amateur wrestler that the sport has competing at a high level today. TJ Dillashaw has the best MMA wrestling, and they happen to be fighting in MMA. I think that's compelling. And I know I'm not going to win you guys over with the wrestling aspect. That's the wrestler in me talking. I know you guys want to see the punches and the kicks. I get all of that. I'm just saying I have a reason to tune in and see this. I have a vested interest in seeing, am I right or am I wrong?
You're listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
Have you checked out the Big Podcast with Shaq here at Podcast One? Yeah, we talk basketball, but we're a lot more than just sports.
I met this fabulous lady. She's had to be in her 70s, knew everything about me, knew everything about sports. And the last thing she says, I love your podcast. And
I'm like, thank you very much.
But I hate that John Kincaid.
Oh, no. That's terrible. Listen free to the Big Podcast with Shaq exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
Guys, whether it's college football, college basketball, NBA, NFL, or hockey, the hottest odds are all waiting for you at BetOnline.ag, the exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet. If you're into the movies and television with the Oscars and Golden Globes coming up, BetOnline.ag has the odds on all of those as well. There's something for all interest types. Get on board today. Create a free account at BetOnline.ag. Use the promo code PODCAST1 and you will receive 50% sign-up bonus today and take advantage of their Refer a Friend program where you can give a 200% bonus to your friend up to $200. Go online or use your mobile phone and sign up today. It's free. Don't forget to try in-game live betting where you can participate with all the action of every play. Remember, when signing up, use the promo code PODCAST1, that's PODCAST O-N-E, to receive a 50% sign-up bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook expert.
Now, back to your welcome with Chael Sonnen.
So, let's see here. We were told that what the UFC would like is for Conor to fight Poirier and Khabib to fight Ferguson next. Almost like a semifinal. Four-man tournament, if you will. Winners advance and fight each other. I like that. Makes sense. I'm on board. Sounds pretty cool. Ali, Khabib's manager, came out and said there is 100% zero chance that Khabib will be fighting Tony Ferguson next. Now, before you get all worked up, who knows? You know, one of the important ingredients in building a big fight is making the fans beg for it. I don't like that. But I can't deny or ignore that that has been a historical important ingredient. So the very first thing to do to make somebody want to see something or have something is tell them they can't have it and they can't see it. So I never know what's going on. Is that what Team Khabib's doing, or do they really not want to do that match next? And that would surprise me. And the argument behind it for, hey, we need to do good business, we need somebody that can move the pay-per-view needle, I think is a little bit false. I don't know that that is a true narrative. Khabib, outside of one time, which was the last time with Conor, has not been in there with somebody that is tremendously going to move that pay-per-view needle. So I don't know that that's ever been a requirement of their team before, which is why I would just say to you, before you get too worked up, if that's the fight, I think that's the fight. And I think there is stuff that you could do there. I do think for the likely suspects, and again, if you're taking Conor out of it, if you're just looking for where can we do the biggest business, you throw Conor in. If we're talking about who's next outside of Conor, I'm not sure you have any choices better than Tony Ferguson. So before any of you get worked up on that, before any of you get mad at Ali about that, making the statement, realize you're the ones with that power. You're the ones with the power to go out and say that's a really big fight. That's the one the buzz is around. That's the one we promise you we will mark on our calendar and make sure we're in front of our TVs pushing the buy button for. You're the ones with the power. If Ali says it's not going to do good numbers, he's talking about you. So you have the power on that. You have the power to say, no, 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 no. You've got that wrong. We will come to the party if they fight. Now, the other side of that, and the reason I told you I don't like it, right? I don't like it, but that's just for me as a fan. I would have to admit that it is helpful, and many guys have followed that recipe. But if you look at Daniel Cormier, and it's always tough when a guy says, no, I only want to fight, and it's only the big numbers. And you know, Floyd did that for years, and it was always tough. But over the years of staying on top, Floyd did eventually chalk up all of the best guys. Can't take that from Floyd. He fought a lot of journeymen. He fought a lot of guys that never should have been in there. But along the way, he did check off that list, from the Pacquiao's to the Mosley's, to the Canelos, he took them all on. To the De La Hoyas, he took them all on. But when you look at the other side of the coin, which is Daniel Cormier, who has now said if Brock does not come to fruition, it will be Stipe next. There is something very refreshing about that attitude, because the champion is now anointing and putting himself opposite the baddest sumbitch he can find. He's not talking about pay-per-views, and he's not talking about an easy light night out. He is offering himself and going to the public to say, I will anoint this guy. Oh, and by the way, unlike the way Floyd Mayweather did it, I'm anointing the baddest sumbitch out there. I'm putting it all on the line. There's just something very cool about that. I never feel that Daniel gets his due. And much like Floyd, at least in this comparison, he has been around and been on top for so long that eventually it comes. But it seemed to come the slow way and the hard way because he doesn't get credit for things like this. Nobody calls out Stipe Miocic. Nobody. Daniel's already been in there with him. Daniel knows the landscape. Daniel knows that's the hardest guy. And he also knows it's not necessarily coming with the biggest paycheck. That's not what it's about. He's a competitor and he's fair. The champion takes on anybody. Prior to being the champion, you want to see your name pop up in the rankings. You're furious if it's not. You begin calling out guys in the rankings so that if you defeat them, your name gets put in that top 10 list with a number next to it. Once you make the list, you try to move up higher on the list, and then you move into what's called the top five. And once you make the top five, you try to become the number one contender. Then once you become the champion, you get up in the loft and you pull the ladder up behind you so nobody else can get up there. All the other guys doing all the same things that you were doing, working just as hard with the same dreams and battling it out and scraping by because you have a dream. You then pull the ladder up in the loft behind you and say, yeah, well, I got here and their dreams don't matter. Even though we have the exact same trajectory and the exact same career paths, their dreams aren't as meaningful as mine. So now what I need to do is make sure that I stay on top, which means avoiding the best guys. That's the game. That's the one we play. But when a guy does that and he does it publicly, it is off-putting to at least me. And when a guy doesn't do that, like Daniel, and he did this with Ozdemir too, he knew that wasn't going to be blockbuster business. He knew they weren't going to have huge paychecks. He just knew that Ozdemir had earned the opportunity and he was going to give it to him. And many people would say, well, yeah, but a guy that earned the opportunity happens to match up stylistically perfectly with your style. Okay, that's fair. That's true. Stipe doesn't qualify for that. Stipe is a terrible matchup for anybody. Same as Cormier is a bad matchup for so Stipe. It is the hardest possible fight that he could go after, and he was very honest about the Brock fight. That's a huge fight, and that's one that I know I can win. But the allure around it and the perception becoming reality of the monster that is Brock Lesnar is a feather I'd like to have in my cap. He was very honest about it. He didn't get credit for that. Now he is saying he will be giving that opportunity to Stipe, and I think he has the power to do it. He had the power to give the opportunity to Ozdemir. Don't correct me that I say Ozdemir wrong. I don't do that to be condescending. Ozdemir. It's a hard name to say. Honor amongst thieves. Chael always gets said wrong, and I say other guys' name wrong. Honor amongst thieves. No condescension meant. But it is something that is really great, right? It is something where, yeah, you can go out and play the media and you can play the system and you can get all the attention, some for good reasons and some for bad. But when a guy does do everything right, for some reason he doesn't get rewarded. I'm seeing that same thing with Amanda. I'm very drawn to Amanda. And I have been for a meaningful amount of time. I've talked to you guys about this, but she was complaining. She had some fight and she was complaining that the UFC was not pushing her and marketing her enough. But she finished that analysis, unlike other fighters, of saying, so if they don't start doing it my way, I'm going somewhere else. She finished that analysis by saying, but boy, am I happy to be here, and boy, are they nice to me. And boy, do they give me an opportunity that I dreamed about having. And she was serious. It wasn't a kiss-ass session. She just shared openly how she felt. And it was pretty cool. And I also met her. I guess I should disclose this. I had a great experience, but I met her out right after the weigh-ins. I'm friends with her coach, Conan. So I went up and said hi to Conan. And Amanda and her fiance were standing right there. And I didn't say hi to either one of them, but I just said hi to Conan. I didn't even realize who he was with. So I stood there and we were all waiting for a car. And a few minutes had gone by and I go, oh my gosh, he's with a man. I need to say hi. So I introduced myself, and I told her, I said, you know, we've never met before, but I feel as though I've known you for years because of this business of MMA where I'm calling your fights and I'm talking about you, and I'm, you know, you're in my living room on a tri-yearly basis. So then I introduced myself, and it was her fiance who I had just called her fight. Feel like I knew her as well. But she was very nice, and she was very sweet. Then when I saw her on TV, because you never know. I guess the point I'm trying to make is you never know what you see on TV. Is that who they are? Is that the act? Is that the character? Are they trying to be liked? Are they trying to not be liked? Are they trying to sell tickets? And I don't really care either way. I'm okay with it as long as I believe it, but sometimes you don't know. So I had this interaction with the two of them, as brief as it may have been, but I could tell there was something very genuine there. So when she gave her post-fight speech, and when all she wanted was to be considered for the Hall of Fame, which is a hysterical request. Literally nobody has been in the octagon holding more hardware at one time than her. Never. It's never happened. And only four athletes have ever held as much hardware as her. They tied her. Or she tied them. But nobody's ever held more. And she's wondering if she'll be considered for the Hall of Fame down the road. Excuse me, Amanda. Okay. Yeah, you will. We could just go ahead and put you in right now. If it'd make you feel better. It's more of like a post-career induction. But the fact that she was so humble to even graciously, with humility, she stuck it up everybody's ass. She stuck it down everybody's throat. She didn't gloat. She didn't take a victory lap. She asked that she be considered someday. There's something about that I found compelling. And from a marketing standpoint, I just hope that resonates with more of you, because there does appear to be in this sport that infamous always trumps famous. If you can get in some trouble somewhere along the way, it's like you're buying into the club of the elite of the MMA world. It shouldn't be that way. That is silly what I'm telling you right now. It works that way in many different forms of entertainment. If you could become infamous, that will be famous. Should it be that way? There should be some credit out there for the guys that are true competitors, that go out and do everything right and treat people the right way when the cameras aren't on. There should be. I want there to be. So I want to bring you aware of the epidemic that surrounds both Daniel Cormier and Amanda Nunes, and they've both done everything right. And they were both champs. Which, by the way, and nobody's really picked up on this, Conor McGregor actually trademarked the term champ. Now, I see other people using it and running with it, and it's become a colloquialism within our space. But you guys might be getting cease and desist letters. Before you know it, Conor McGregor, who coined the term, also went out and trademarked the term. That's a little FYI. Little heads up to you all. Don't get too loose with that term. I see my terms getting stolen left and right. I take it as a compliment, but I didn't take that further step of trademarking it. Little friendly advice from Chael for the new year.
Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in the bumper when you nervously picked up your first date, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. Well, you can't put a price tag on the stories. Now, with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then, just answer a few questions. Navigation, moonroof, high mileage. You already knew it was going to cost you. But now you'll know how much of a hit it's going to be, so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer emailed to you in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your vehicle, check out TrueCar today. True cash offers not available in all areas.
I will leave you guys with one thought. So I went and I ordered on New Year's. On New Year's, I stayed in and I ordered the house that Jack built. Matt Dillon, and there was many other actors, but essentially it was just Matt Dillon. The whole budget for this film was $8 million. It grossed internationally a collective $1.6 million. So it was a disaster in that regard. But it also got a ranking of top 10 movies of 2018. So that made me want to see it. Then it was like a 3-hour film. way longer than it should have been, or way longer than I would have thought it was going to be. Either way, I ordered it and I watched it, and Matt Dillon is a serial killer who is like kind of making confessions of each crime, if you will, which they called it acts. Like they would flash on the screen in print, act one, and he would go through it, and they would go, act two, and they would go through it. I thought it was a very good way to make a movie. I thought from a directional standpoint, it was a lot of fun and a really good way to do it and bring the audience along. Overall, it's a piece of crap that I give two thumbs up to. It's a film I give two thumbs up to that I would not recommend for you to go see. And the reason I say that is I don't want you to see it and then go and base that upon my prediction ability. It was a weird movie, and I got that. It was way too long, and I get that. And the conclusion is something I find lazy, which is it was open for interpretation. I know artistically in Hollywood, they like to call that poetic license and think that they're doing some level of brilliance and deep thinking there. They're not. They're lazy. The artisticness of doing something like that is the marketing to cover up when the directors, writers, either one, can't film a proper conclusion, or two, can't come up with one. But that was, and that's a middle finger to the audience. To bring you along on a three-hour journey and then leave a conclusion open to interpretation and discussion, that's a big giant F you. Aside from that, I thought the film was fun to watch, but weird and dark. I must warn you. I must warn you. Chapter 4, if you will, was dark, but I thought it was really well done, and I enjoyed it, and I thought Matt Dillon was talented. And when I had the backstory that they did the whole thing for $8 million, that it was a colossal flop, but rated one of the top 10 movies of the year, I thought, I'm going to go watch this, and I see why it would be. Very, very different film, and you could tell that it was low budget. By example, they wanted to reference World War II at one point. So on the screen, and I think this was done just because of the lack of budget, they started playing a soundtrack of like airplane noises. There's like airplane noises going while there is still photographs being flipped through of like B-52 bombers in Germany. That is how they did the establishing shot for World War II. So it was cheap, but there was also something cute about that. There was something simplistic about it. It's like, yeah, I get it. I get it. You didn't need to spend $1 million to give me that. Make the airplane sound, flash it up on the screen. I get it. We've established this is now World War II. So overall, two thumbs up, and I'm not going to recommend it for you guys, but make your own choice. And if you do see it, I'd love to hear what you thought. I've had it with you all. Enjoy your weekends, but make sure you're here next Wednesday because we will be back and we will have a lot of news for you. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Podcast One Sports is your home for the Underdog Sports Network. Join Chris Horwoodell and friends each week as they cover the biggest stories in sports with shows like Tales from the Association, the Underdog Sports NFL Show, and You're Wrong and Here's Why.
You can't rely on draft picks a lot of times with quarterbacks. There's 4 to 5 quarterbacks drafted in the first round that are complete busts.
Check out all these exciting shows on the Underdog Sports Network every week on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.